Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Trend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Makone Maja. Again, to our first news story today, and there are increasing signs that the coalition agreements between the ANC and EFF are falling apart in Gauteng, specifically the metros of Ekurhuleni and Johannesburg. Since 2022, the ANC and EFF have been in an alliance to hold control of some of the country's most important metros in Gauteng, namely, like I said, Joburg and Ekurhuleni. And this relationship has been fraught with a lot of contest, particularly in Ekurhuleni, where the ANC there has been very unhappy with the arrangement. It does seem like things are continuing to deteriorate now as the ANC in Ekurhuleni fired an EFF MMC, that's a member of the mayoral committee, who was in the finance portfolio for the city, and replaced him with an ANC guy. In retaliation, the EFF has been voting against ANC proposals in councils across Gauteng, including in Johannesburg, where the ANC government sought to claim take out a very large loan for the city that was very aggressively opposed by the DA and Action SA. The EFF joined the opposition in voting against this loan, and the ANC is now finding itself essentially as a minority government in Johannesburg and Ekurhuleni. Also, the EFF was not included in the Government of Provincial Unity despite Panyaza Lesufi's closeness to the EFF, suggesting that there was either pressure from above or perhaps hesitation on Lesufi's side to include the EFF in the Gauteng Provincial Government, especially when the DA was not going to be included in that government as well. So there are a lot of questions now about whether things are going to shift in the balance of power in these metros. For example, is the ANC going to decide that it would be better to be in alliance with the DA in these metros? Or will it continue to try and just sort of bludgeon on without the EFF, hoping that it can somehow get through on a vote-by-vote basis, maybe by cooperating with some of the other parties? Makone, what do you make of the state of affairs? It's been interesting to watch the EFF-ANC alliance because on paper, the two parties share a lot of the same worldview, a lot of the same ideas about policy. And yet in practice, they've had a uncomfortable relationship, even if it has been surprisingly resilient, despite all the friction.
I would suspect that the ANC and the EFF's unreasonable negotiating prowesses are the reason why there's been such a great breakdown in their relationship in Gauteng. And Nick, just to speak a little bit more about that loan as well, the ANC has tabled that 2.5 billion loan billion rand loan from the French agency AFD for the fourth time now, and it still hasn't materialized in a fruitful progression where they're actually able to obtain this loan. So it seems that these breakdowns, if anything, that is an indication of how long and sustained they have been, because the ANC still hasn't been able to go forth with that loan despite the perceived support and relationship or rapport between members of the EFF in Gauteng and Panyaza Lesufi. I think we had a little bit of a discussion about this as soon as the GNU was formed and even before, wondering how national politics would affect local government. And although this is still very much within the legislatures and the municipalities, not so much, but I think it's also giving us insights into what will happen when the local government elections roll about, because there's been a lot of rhetoric from the ANC about stability, and yet they're able to see how their relationships with some of the parties like the EFF hasn't really materialized in that stability. If anything, it's sort of halted the ANC and it stopped it from being able to actually get things done, which you would think would be the sort of relationship the ANC and the DA would have, since their policy positions are such opposing forces. Well, that does remain to be seen. Can also be seen here that even when the alliances, at least ideologically, run deep, they haven't actually materialized in practical action being effected in Gauteng.
Exactly. I think part of this is due to the fact that the ANC continues to believe that it is still at the center of politics in South African life, and that this is a change that is just not, it's just not, it doesn't have a culture of giving way in any circumstance. And we can see this in the final results of the Government of National Unity, where we've now also seen a lot of portfolios being handed out. And once again, The ANC has gotten by far the lion's share of portfolio chairmanships in Parliament. So I think one of the big questions to be is if the ANC and DA do go into some sort of coalition in Johannesburg, we may very well see the same clashes coming up again with the DA maybe pulling what it did in Gauteng and saying that the ANC is not willing to give them enough share of the power in the metros. I suspect that...
I agree.
I suspect that the DA is hesitant to try and form any kind of coalition in Johannesburg, particularly when the ANC and the EFF seem to be having such a rough time together.
Exactly. I also think that it's that concession to the election loss that gave us the impression that there would actually be a material relinquishing of power from the ANC. But what we've seen is the appearance of relinquishing of power, but not the substance of it. Because, like you pointed out, they still hold a majority of the positions, a disproportionate, I'd argue, majority of positions in spite of the election results. Those results are not necessarily reflective or demonstrative of how that power is being shared in Parliament at present. And I'm sure that's a deterrence as well for the DA moving into provincial government power share.
We'll have to see whether this attitude can survive the greatly altered political dynamics in the country now going forward. Okay, let's move on to our next story. And this is from yesterday, where the Pretoria High Court handed down almost 10 years after the fact its ruling on an inquest into the deaths at the Life Esidimeti affair. Patients were moved from Life Esidimeti facilities to a bunch of not very well-resourced, equipped, or professional NGOs, and these mentally ill patients, many of them died as a result of neglect and bad care. The inquest found that former Gauteng Health MEC Gladani Mahlangu had been negligent in their conduct, and that this has definitely contributed to the cause of deaths of these mentally ill patients. This entire saga remains one of the grimmest and most horrific, I think, failures of government since the beginning of democracy in 1994, where we saw, you know, some of society's most vulnerable people left essentially to die in their beds when they were supposed to be under the care of the state. The health spokesperson for the national government said that this inquest will help bring proper closure and healing to all families. But yeah, well, despite many promises that such a thing will never be repeated in Gauteng, and despite claims that this is somehow going to bring closure, there are many who seem to feel that this is not nearly enough. The DA's health MEC, shadow health MEC in Gauteng, Jack Bloom, said that this is that the people found responsible here should be charged with culpable homicide due to the fact that they have played a role in the deaths of these people. And it does feel a little bit hollow, some of this, that there isn't more punishment being dealt out to those who contributed to such a terrible, terrible event.
Yeah, this is a case of serious liability on the part of not just the MEC, but the Gauteng Department of Health at large. And I believe that the charges would at least bring about a moment of reckoning at the extent to which the state can really cause harm, Nick. I think that the health department indicated that they'd be studying the court judgment before they comment or act on it. What I read from the South African Health Commission, Human Rights Commission report on what happened, it's about a 70-page document detailing what happened in this great tragedy, is that the MEC is not the only person who was implicated in this. There are two members of the Gauteng Department of Health who they say fingerprints are peppered throughout this tragedy. One of them is Dr. Makana, I believe. I may be wrong on that surname, but he or she was responsible for signing off invalid licenses that were issued to these NGOs who were then responsible for caring for these patients who succumbed to various injuries and ultimately resulted in deaths. Such negligence on the part of that specific individual, but again, the department as a whole, in their rush to, I guess, move these patients from the SAD Mini facility to these NGOs, it needs to be accounted for. And I think that the charge for culpable homicide would be the first step towards real accountability, but also justice for the lives of the people who suffered so tragically.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's move on to our next story. And Sakhalika has been raising a stink about new policies and regulations being put forward in a draft by the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority relating to Black economic empowerment rules. According to Sakhalika, SAHPRA's plan is to make BEE a prerequisite in the medical industry for procurement of a number of products and medical equipment. The end result of this is no doubt to be something on where we see essentially prices rise or availability be limited for access to a number of healthcare products in order to ensure BEE compliance. McCorney, you recently wrote an opinion piece talking about Black economic empowerment being an important test of the Government of National Unity, and that rejecting some of the disastrous BEE policies of the last 20 years is a very important move that the Government of National Unity must at some point make if it's going to make real progress. Can you talk a little bit more about this?
Yeah, so that's the article I titled To Be or Not To Be. And in it, I basically just detail how BEE has resulted in a disproportionate amount of resources that should be dedicated to marginalized people, but has instead gone towards enriching the few elite in society, but also that need should be gauged by economic circumstances rather than race, because race is such an arbitrary, well, not with respect to South Africa's history, but race is not a good indicator of need. And that's why you have resources being distributed so in ways that are so out of sorts. And I think this is another way in which you see how these racial laws can be weaponized, because I'm pretty sure that patients in South Africa who care about cheap and affordable, but also accessible medication that is delivered on time, care more about all those factors that I've listed: efficiency, price, accessibility, availability, rather than whether the skin color of the person providing it is Black or white or otherwise. And so good on Sakhalika for taking this on. They've indicated that they'll also be litigating over this, but again, just shows you how we're focusing on issues that do not actually solve the problems that we have. If our issue is that medication is not affordable, then let's deal with the affordability question. But introducing BEE to that there's no relationship between those two items, at least not to me.
Exactly. As our colleague Herman Pretorius often says, this really is a great example of BEE not being Black economic empowerment, but actually being blatant elite enrichment. Because the only people are those already successful business people who are going to benefit from this kind of action, whereas people who can't afford medications, the poorest in our society, will be the ones to suffer as a result of this. So it's always something to keep in mind about who's actually benefiting from these policies, regardless of their intentions. All right. That is all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.